We are burning down the house at heritageradionetwork.com. But you already knew that because you found us through the genius of the internet, the World Wide Web, here every Wednesday at 7 Eastern Time, 4 Pacific Time, and at the stroke of midnight, Thursday morning in London. Hello to all of our listeners all over the planet. We are burning down the house, continuing conversation about the culture of architecture in which we tear down, lay forth, and build up the elements, the attitudes, opinions, obsessions, fantasies, passions, and ideas that direct and inform the creation of our built environment. Our built environment. That's specifically important today because we're speaking with Katie Pervyansbasich. Did I pronounce that correctly? Katie, are you there?
Almost. Almost. Can you hear me?
Yes. Come a little closer.
How's this? How does that sound?
Well, it sounds like you're on Mars, but it's better than being on Venus. Okay.
All right. Yes, it's Katie Pervyansbasich.
All right. And also joining us through the miracle of telecommunications is architect Matthew Arnold. Are you there, Matt?
Yeah, let's burn down the house tonight.
All right. Like, we have a lot of thorny things. Can you people hear each other?
Yes, I can hear you, Matt.
All right, good. Okay. Because I might have to intermediate a little bit. And in studio joining us is the Reverend Dr. Professor Roderick L. Knox, Professor of Architecture at Cooper Union, our fair alma mater.
Yes.
You come
yes,
a little indeed. Closer, Rod. All right. Okay. Now, the reason that we've all convened this evening is because of a crisis of faith that our fair Katie experienced as the result of her having been, and perhaps she'll return, having been a student in the MARC, that's the Masters of Architecture, program at the Harvard Design School, which Professor Knox and I are graduates of. And the experience of what you were being taught or not taught, apropos of the built environment, so disturbed you, Katie, as I understand it, that you, in protest, and as a vital force of what you had to do, are founding your own alternative architecture school. Tell us some about that. Speak.
You know, I was inspired by my disappointment, shall I say. You know, I read this book when I was a kid on drawing, and the author said he wrote this book because he could not find the kind of book he wanted as a child, so he wrote his own. That was my idea with the school I'd like to start. I was really shocked when I went to Harvard. Harvard has a great reputation, and my family was just astounded when I got in. My parents didn't go to college. It was a really big deal for my family. And then I got there, and I was really shocked. We spent, I want to say, about 16 hours every single day staring at our computers. We learned how to use different 3D modeling programs.
Oh, wait, this is at Harvard, or is this at in your family?
I'm sorry?
You transitioned from your family being astounded to being at Gund Hall in Cambridge.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I went to Harvard. I was very pleased to be accepted. And then once I got there, it was a culture shock for me because I had taken architecture classes at my alma mater at the University of Idaho. I had been in an architecture program here in Los Angeles, where I'm calling from now. And then when I went to Harvard, I felt like all we really did is we stared at our computers all day. And I kept asking myself, why is it that becoming an architect means staring at your computer all day? Why is it that the only parts of my body that are moving are my mouse hand and my eyeballs?
Well, surely, Katie, there must have been more to the experience. Lectures, for example.
Yes, we did have lectures. We got to walk a few feet from our studio desk into our lecture hall. That's when most people got their sleep, or when most people would take a Facebook break.
They slept through a class that was costing them $11,000?
Yes, we have one lecture class. It's a 3-semester required course called Buildings, Text, and Context. This was in our main lecture hall called Piper Auditorium, and there was an upper level, and that was the sleeping section.
Who taught it?
Most people slept through that. Michael Hayes.
Ah, yeah, you mean K. Michael Hayes.
Yes.
I read a book of his just now, and it was all about John Haydick, who I know intimately, and I didn't recognize anything he was saying.
And
it's called Architecture's Desire. It gave me a headache that is still pounding.
So building text and context. So what was the purported reason for this class, apropos of the built environment?
Very little. I think we got into the second semester before we looked at a picture of a building. We learned a lot about the French Revolution. Every week we had a very thick, dense academic paper to read that we were supposed to discuss sitting around a circle Thursday evenings. I think that's the time that most people just kind of zoned out and thought about their studio projects.
Well, sure. I suppose it's interesting to know that as a result of the French Revolution, they reconfigured the calendar, and so that when it was hot out, that it was the month of Thermidor. And when it was cold out, it was Frigor or Frigidor or something like that. But that's collateral stuff you pick up just reading in general as a part of acculturation as an architect and being aware of history and what has come before. But I would think that at some point, if you're going to talk about the French Enlightenment that came interspersed with the Reign of Terror, you would want to look at Boulle and some of those custom houses. Don't you agree, Professor?
Oh, me.
If you're going to talk about the French Revolution, you have to talk about those pristine geometric buildings that were designed.
I'm still on K. Michael Hayes.
Was that a jaw dropper? Was it? Now, I mean, the notion of starting your own architecture school that focuses on building or learning design by building—that's been done before. Yestermorrow in Vermont does that. Matt Arnold and I, in fact, have been discussing actively having an internship school that teaches construction administration. Weigh in anytime you like, Matt, by the way. You don't have to be so polite.
Well, I want to hear more about her experience.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of time, and I'd like to know a little bit more about what happened at Harvard.
And what was so wrong. So give us some more details. Let's leave Professor Hayes by the wayside now and move towards, you know, other things that you found unsatisfactory.
You know, we had this class that I don't understand why it was taught the way it was taught. It was called scripting. I was listening to one of your other podcasts where a couple of the students were talking about their scripting class. It was a very strange class. Scripting is essentially using a 3D program and coding it in such a way that it will generate architectural form. That sounds interesting in concept. I've taken a couple coding classes when I was at the University of Idaho, and I learned it in such a way that I still possess those skills today. The way that we learned scripting at the JSD is our professor would show us slides of what the code looked like and then quickly shoot forward to a slide of the result of that code. And this was done in very small font. At no point did we really learn how to script. We did have a review session with an older student late one night, and he was trying to teach us, and it was the first time someone was really trying to teach us how to script, and it was very frustrating. And one of my fellow classmates spoke up, and he said, "This is a foreign language to us, and you're trying to teach us sentences. We haven't even learned the letters yet." So I got one right on the midterm. The final, I don't know what I got on the final, but it's interesting to note that our final exams were due the day after that the professors had to give their grades into the department, and I passed the class, knowing nothing about scripting.
That sounds a little bit corrupt.
It sounds like Harvard.
Did you have any contact with the chairman of the architecture department?
You mean Preston Scott Cohen?
Yes.
I didn't really spend any time one-on-one with him. He co-taught another class. It was a projective geometry class. It was half a semester, and he co-taught that with a professor named Cameron, who I actually liked very much. But it was a strange format in that it was more like the Preston and Cameron hour. It was more like a little talk show, a conversation between the two, where they bantered back and forth, and we were supposed to try to learn projective geometry from that. Cameron, I think, is an excellent professor. He's actually worked with me over the phone from his home in New York to try to help me actually learn how to do that. So I admire him for that. But the class itself.
I want to understand what projective geometry is, because I started studying architecture as a boy. And I know about orthographic projection, and I know how you construct 1 and 2 point perspective manually. What is projective geometry?
Well, it's kind of like that. We would do it in AutoCAD, and it would be, for an example, if you had a cube that was turned a particular way and you were to rotate it so many angles around, like if it were on a wheel and you were to turn that wheel so far, what would that 3D cube now look like? So it was a way to construct those images.
But it seems to me that that's almost like teaching undergraduates remedial English. I mean, that is such basic representational drawing technique that it's astounding that it's being taught
in
a graduate level.
Mechanical drawing. You remember they call it mechanical drawing.
Yeah, those are the basics of mechanical drawing. Yeah. I should think that that would be a prerequisite before you were even accepted to a design school.
Yeah, it was high
school. You know how to... that's high school stuff.
Yeah, I did take mechanical drawing my first semester at the University of Idaho, so I understand the concepts behind it. The way it was taught, though, it was kind of hard to follow. That was my biggest complaint with the GSDs, the way that things are taught.
Talking about drawing instead of showing you how to do it, so that as a tool, you know how to do it from having an instructor there in the studio as you're doing it.
Absolutely.
Now, we had architectonics at Cooper Union, and we were required to do plan, section, elevation, and axonometric. And we were told what the degree of the axonometric was required of us, but then we were up to ourselves to do it. You remember, Rod?
Yeah.
Because it was understood that we were smart enough to figure it out.
Yeah.
And all of us actually had done some work before we were even admitted. So what I'm hearing in terms of an indictment is that they don't expect you to know or have invested any intellectual capital in preparing yourself before you show up, and then they just talk about what you're supposed to do. And so I what I'm hearing is that you have a basic and fundamental gripe with their method of inculcation.
Catherine, if I may, I was up there last semester. I went up to sit in on a jury, and I felt that the feeling I left with was that people pay so much money to sit in these little cubicles that you can't give them criticism. You have to spoon feed them, and you have to be polite, and you have to. And I saw no criticism whatsoever. I saw no teaching going on. I saw a sort of, I just saw a sort of diploma mill.
You saw what? I'm sorry.
A diploma mill at work. You know, there where you pay your money. You pays and you stays. And I was surprised that the work that was put up was, they didn't speak about it in critical ways. It was all complimentary, and they all pretty much looked the same. They're all computer done, and they were, you present, every student had a huge computer screen, and they had all sorts of gizmos to project. Nobody drew, and you sit down, and you make this presentation as though you're in a conference room. And if you ask any questions, I got into, one of their former deans was there, I forgot his name, he was very defensive about me even asking any questions about, about his students. And I thought they're being cheated because they don't know what they really have no there's no philosophy.
Which is a real pity, because there should be, I think, a legacy of the essentially questioning nature that Gropius brought when he came in 1947 from the Bauhaus.
Yes,
with a design methodology.
Yeah.
Now we can argue whether Grope was destructive by throwing out all of history that had come before, but still and all, he had a
philosophy.
Yes, and he had a way of teaching students how to apply problem solving methods to real world challenges, and with the intention of actually creating something that's built.
Yes.
Which is, although Grope and Mies did not get along, Mies van der Rohe and Walter Gropius, for those of you who are civilians who may be listening tonight, Mies and Grope did not get along very well. Mies would go through, he would just show up at the Harvard Design School, and he'd tell the students, don't listen to Grope, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And then on the other hand, then Mies would say, well, that is really built, you know. That was his highest level of acclaim for a project.
But these men were experienced men. You have kids teaching kids, inexperienced kids that are self-proclaimed architects, given selling this education that is supposed to be a profession.
Well, which is why they have nothing critical, and I mean critical in the precise sense of, yes, that's good, but it's not good in this way. Now, in your own experience at Cooper Union, yes, Matt?
I was going to ask Katie, what's her perception of the professors in practice at Harvard? Were many practicing architects? What is the situation with that? All the ethereal arguments aside, do they bring practical expertise about building to the table, if you ask?
Absolutely not.
We'll let Katie answer that. Oh,
no, I didn't really see anything like that. There were a few professors whose experience I respected. There was one professor who taught us about energy and technology in the building, and a big interest of mine is designing houses that are appropriate for its own local climate. So I respected that professor a lot. Most of them, I don't know what I got from them. I felt like I spent tens of thousands of dollars, and I don't know what I got in return.
Yeah, I think that is a good place for us to catch our breaths, and let's have some truth after this musical break. From uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites, all I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head, yellow belly, son of tricky dicky's gonna mother her, but top so me for just a pocket full of hope. Money for dough. Money for
seeing things from tight-lipped, condescending mamas.
Heritage Radio Network wants to bring you some truth. Burning Down the House this evening is brought to you by Hearst Ranch since 1865 on 156,000 acres of Pacific grasslands. The Hearst family has been raising grass-fed. What are you laughing about? It's so funny. 156,000 acres of grasslands with beef that is grass-fed, grass-finished. It's a different flavor of beef. It is really, really something special. They are a very good friend of Heritage Radio Network. And just to get, you know, since we're talking about the world of the real environment, not the headspace, 156,000 acres is more land than all five boroughs of New York City. I mean, think about Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx, covered with grassland, raising cattle with real cowboys. I mean, there's something rather spectacular about that. So, John Lennon really kind of, he sums up, I think, your indictment of the regime of Preston Scott Cohen. Now, of course, he's not here to defend himself, and in the fullness of time, I'm sure he will listen to this program, and he is welcome to come and tell us how it is that Harvard Graduate School of Design is true to the legacy of Gropius, is worthy of the Harvard name, and is truly a spectacular and wonderful place that merits having students spend $200,000 to get a Master's of Architecture degree, after which they can enter the workplace and perhaps, if there are any jobs, demand a salary of $40,000 because they don't actually fucking know anything about how to build a building. That's the problem that we older architects have with newly minted professional degree students, is they've not been taught anything about the building arts. They've been taught how to be computer-generating CAD jockeys a la Zaha Hadid or Frank Gehry with his CATIA system.
I would like to... I've got
to jump in here, Curtis, and correct you, because that was a beautiful rant, but it's not just the old fogies like us who are upset with it. The people who are in it are full of the same anger about the situation. They don't want to do that any more than we think they're incompetent.
Look,
they want to know, and they're not getting fed.
I just like to clarify something so that we understand that for me, what makes you an architect is a philosophical bend. I mean the technical side of architecture is there's only one way to teach structures. There's only one way to teach HVAC and all these things. And you know, I have no problem with that. I simply have a problem with the art of architecture, which is a combination of the engineering and the art, is that fusion is disconnected, and it's philosophy that binds the two together. I mean, the whole idea of improving the quality of life and having a political bent, so to speak,
and that is in part a social,
yes,
and a pedagogical inculcation. Now, Katie, on your blog, which is tell us, please.
My blog is architectureaddiction.com.
Right, I believe that you posted a link to a really deep and multi-layered site that we can find where a sociological inquiry into the nature of architectural education has been undertaken. And there's a distinction given there that during the break that Professor Knox and I were talking about. Two kinds of education must form an architectural background. One is classes where it's the answer is yes or no. And those are the hard sciences of of engineering, which then the author of this particular study that you sent to me last night says that the more privileged students who come from families with social and or cultural capital tend to disdain, but they do so at their own peril, because you cannot be an architect if you're not a master of all of these hard...
Yes, a generalist, so to speak.
Not only a generalist, a deep generalist who is in total command of the hard science and the soft science of the integrative nature of design, relying on an underpinning of the real structure.
And you can't have one without the other.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you are just a building decorator.
Right.
Yes.
So, there are other schools. There's Yestermore, there's Taliesin. I think perhaps it's SciArc. They might be a little bit more interested in how you actually build. I haven't been there. I'd like to go. I'm available to come and be a guest lecturer.
Catherine, did you ever build a model by constructing it with your hands?
Yes, a few times. We had a number of laser cutters there, and most of us
a laser
would
cutter.
Design.
No, it's all laser.
We would design a building in Rhino and then flatten it in AutoCAD and then run it through the laser cutter and then assemble it. That's nice for some precision. There were a few times where I just built it completely by hand. Harvard, I did everything by hand before.
You didn't have the pleasure of cutting yourself with a brand new X-Acto blade and bleeding all over the polished concrete floor.
That's for sure. No, I find model making to be a very pleasurable activity, one that I really enjoy.
But, it's essential.
I know how to build models. I don't know how to build buildings.
Well, there is a big difference, you know, and that gets around to modeling and BIM, building information modeling. The lack of things that make buildings fail, like flashings or galvanic action, are not BIM objects that get built into that model. So BIM can't do your thinking for you. Rhino can't think for you. All Rhino can do is give you a 3D model that you can walk through and have shading effects. And oh, it looks good, but it's not really a building. It's a model. It's a maquette, as they would say. It's on a
blank background with no relationship to, there's no site, there's no climate. You can't see what the weather is like. It's just a blank background with this object floating in space that you can rotate and pan, and it's in pretty colors, and that's all it is.
Right. But now let's start talking about the Verb School, your school that you're trying to found, with all of the energy of a modern-day St. Joan of Arc, may I say. I am impressed.
Thank you.
I am impressed. How is your school going to be different from these other precursors?
I would say I'm taking inspiration from them. I really wish I'd spent my tens of thousands of dollars attending workshops at some of these other schools rather than giving it to the GSD. The main difference between Verb and some other schools is I'm imagining a number of different campuses in different climatic areas. As I said before, it's very important to me that a house be designed specifically for its own local climate. So my idea is to have different campuses around the country where if you want to learn how to go build a house, you can go take 2 weeks, you can go down the street or the next town over and learn how to build a house that works for your particular climate so that you don't need to rely on fossil fuels and HVAC technology. I want to bring back some of the vernacular ideas that our ancestors, until not too long ago, they just knew. They knew how to build a house for their own climate using materials that were found on site that evolved over time.
That is truly green.
Yes.
Yes.
That is my goal.
Yeah, and also traveling, to go and see things firsthand and go to other countries is essential to an architectural education.
I agree.
Give us the URL for your Verb School site, if you can.
It's just verbschool.com.
All right. And how long have you been working on this concept?
I think I had the first ideas of this my second semester at Harvard. I realized that the way they were teaching us just simply wasn't working. I wasn't remembering most of what we heard in lecture because you don't remember things that you simply hear. and I really wanted to learn how to build. I was so disappointed by all the things I wasn't learning. I actually used to skip class and go down to our library, which I thought was a fantastic library, and sit and read books about the subjects I was actually interested in.
Well,
I did a lot of my learning there.
It's true.
So that's when I started thinking that, what if there was a place where I could just go and learn to build? And I started learning about some of these other schools, like Yes Tomorrow, like you said. I have a list on my blog on architectureaddiction.com of some other workshops that I've found just in my research. I actually have someone for me right now making a list of all these different workshops as a way to generate ideas for Verb. And there are a lot of fantastic people out there doing some really good work.
Yeah,
I think one of the problems is that architecture students, the way that the IDP is set up and the licensure is set up, you're supposed to go through this architecture school program that's accredited, and then you're supposed to go through this long process to get licensed. What if you just want to learn how to build a house and be an architect and do that for other people? I mean, does it really take 20 years of your life to be able to do that?
Okay, well,
why can't you just do that?
Yes, but before we go off into the Habitat for Humanity mode, not that there's anything ignoble about that whatsoever, Dr. Arnold, I want you to weigh in. You and I had a conversation about the value of an education not being something that is purely received, like being a consumer. Would you like to speak about that?
Well, what Katie's found, well, I think I've read some of her writings. I'm enjoying working my way through it slowly to digest it on her website, and not being too hasty about it. But what I'm finding there is that she found after trying it that the value proposition at Harvard wasn't the value proposition she thought it was. Apparently, Harvard's selling credentials, and she thought they were selling content. She didn't get content. She blames them for it. Now, the vulnerability in her argument is that there's a lot of people who think you need good teachers, but I don't think education is... I think teachers make education possible, but they don't necessarily make it happen. Education is what happens inside the student. What Katie seems to be saying is that the education she expected, the education she paid, whatever she paid for it, enough to survive for many years or to start a school on, all by itself, did not provide her with the benefit. And she tried every way she knew how to get what she could while she was there. But it's all of us have a responsibility as we're learning to define whether what we're learning is what we want to learn. And I think if she got anything from Harvard, the fire that's in her to do it right, she will eventually come to realize was worth the cost. But it's going to burn her, and it's going to make a lot of work for her in the meantime.
Yeah.
But I guess what I want her to address is the student's responsibility. The problem is that students come and go. The professors stay and the administration stays, but the students come and go. And yet, without the students, there's no reason for the school. So, it's a funny dynamic because the students actually define the school as they go out and represent in the world, and yet they have no ability to change what the school dispenses.
Is that the kind of student you were, Matt? I things have changed, yes?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly, Rod, if I had waited a few years and gone to Cooper, I would have got a lot more out of it. I missed a lot of what Cooper had to offer because it stuck in my throat. So it went in sideways, and I didn't swallow. And it sounds, so I completely identify with Katie's experience, except for the part where I didn't have to write a check.
Yeah. Well, there's
for what I got.
Yeah. Well, I want to take a little break in just about 30 seconds. What I'm hearing is that there's not the kind of student activism that Professor Knox and I are comfortable with.
Exactly.
What Katie is wanting is for the administration at the Harvard Design School to hear this message, to wake up. She wants to work with her hands. And what they're having her do is sit mesmerized by a CAD screen, which is an empty experience. Let's just take 3 minutes, hear a little bit more John Lennon. We'll come right back.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
such doleful music. This is Eric Satie, Trois Gymnopédies, Part 1. It's a sad state of affairs here as we are burning down the house on Heritage Radio Network. Brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the finest grass-fed, grass-finished beef in the United States. I mean, I will say that without exception. And they are very good friends of Heritage Radio Network. So, Katie, tell us how to pronounce your name again.
my maiden name is Proviance.
Or Proviance, yes.
Proviance. And then my married name is Bosich. I just got married last month.
Good luck.
Thank you.
May all your problems be little ones. Ha ha ha. Also here with Matthew Arnold. Calling in from Northern Virginia and Roderick Elnox here in studio.
You know what happens after 30 years, don't you? Tell her what happens. The license expires.
we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, apropos of Dr. Margaret Mead and her notion of conditional marriage based on times of your life. And if you are lucky, you can make it go from one segment to the next. But if you are a normal, modern person, don't be surprised if you find yourself being married 4 or 5 times. Haven't you been married 5 times?
Ah, no.
I'm working on it. Working class. I mean, working with your hands. Definitely what you are attempting here. If all you accomplish is to raise the level of discourse about the validity, and I mean that in terms of value, of the status quo, of the received education, which isn't working for you and isn't working for a lot of people who write me and say, wow, you're giving real criticism. I haven't heard real criticism in so very long.
We gave Eisenman a hard time in the classroom.
Yes, we did.
You know, and we gave everybody a hard time.
And we were not afraid to do so because it was our education.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. That's all true. But when I graduated from Cooper, as far as I knew, I mean, we had a couple classes in EVC and technology, but a wall was consisted of 2 lines, usually parallel. And that's not enough.
You're dating yourself.
Is, if you go to the best school in the world, you think it's the best school in the world to become an architect, you imagine, and you shouldn't be wrong, that you're going to graduate knowing something about building. And if we want credibility out in the world where people need a roof over their head and a warm hearth to sit by and smooch with their new husband, we got to be able to build right.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get that in any architecture school I know of. You will get that if you study construction management at Pratt, however. I had a very interesting conversation.
No, I disagree. I disagree. I think Cooper gave you a rounded education. I mean, really, you may have had problems with certain...
problems with Eisenman, Abram, Heydrich.
Yeah, but that's gobbledygook.
All of their faces.
Yeah, it's like, a gobbledygook you had the problem with, but you didn't really have a problem. You had the best structures and the best EVT.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, today, guys, all the schools in the world are saying, well, we hand all that problems off to IDP. We don't have to be concerned with that because they'll get that after they graduate when they're out in the world.
The intern development program, right.
And they're not getting it. And we're not giving it in the real world. We're sticking them behind a computer monitor where all they do is copy and paste from one job to another and hope it's harmonized.
It's a computer that it comes down to that has made everyone lazy.
And corrupt.
Yes.
Because there is such a wealth of information instantly available on the internet. And if you don't have the discernment to know whether what you're looking at is shit or good, well, how would you know that? You wouldn't know that because you're... a course that, Katie, if you're going to have you know, a real school with accreditation. And I think the idea of having different campuses across different climate zones is great, because then you can rotate the students around between the different campuses.
Yes.
But interspersed, as an example of a really good technical course that I happen to have enjoyed having at Harvard, was Robert Newman's acoustics class. And he would talk about the physics of acoustics. We had to use the hard math, anti-logs, I mean, you know, mind-bending stuff that I had never really had to use heretofore, but I learned it. I found a TA, got walked through it, so that I could actually do the calculations that you need in order to do acoustical analysis. But he would talk about the physics of acoustical energy so that you were bullshit-proofed if you saw an ad for something like Hushalon. That was one of the things he loved to rant about. Hushalon, it was an eighth of an inch thick, and it was advertised that it gave you this incredible noise-absorbing quality, which was physically impossible. One of his sayings was, "Stand aside, laws of physics. Hushalon goes beyond the real world." If your instructors took examples of crap that you can find on the internet and said, well, here's a detail. This is why it's wrong, because it's missing flashings, for example. That would be instructive. It wouldn't undercut the intellectual validity of all the other, you know, building text and context stuff.
Matt, in your research, doesn't Harvard rank high on the list of graduates who get their license?
It's a good school, but you know, Rod, we don't know. If you go to Tuskegee, what kind of job are you going to get? What's the quality of your internship going to be? If you come out of Harvard, you're not on the same track as somebody that comes out of Tuskegee. So Harvard gets a lot of benefits because of that, in those rankings, in those ratings.
Because it has a name, going back to 1638.
People with means have access to it, and people without means don't. And if we want to pretend that doesn't matter, we can, but it doesn't make it true. You know? And just because Harvard ranks well doesn't mean it's good.
That's right.
The average ride is four times as long as they say it is. So what's average isn't very good, in my view. You have to be pretty extraordinary to be called, acceptable.
For what to be called acceptable?
If a school has graduates getting licensed in 5 years, that's acceptable.
That would be...
There isn't a school in the country that's got that as an average.
Right. Well, that's
that's what I would call acceptable.
And that's a failure of the current state of the IDP, which we spoke about on June 23rd. Those of you in the podcast world, you can come back and look at that, where Professor Knox and Dr. Arnold and I spoke about credentialing, just, you know, to promote ourselves.
Before this program's over, I'd love for Katie to have a chance to talk about what folks who are interested in helping her or supporting her or enrolling, what they can do. Because, I think that she's got, I think there's a need for it, accredited or not. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's a tough road, and she's going to need a lot of help.
Yeah. Katie, I had a couple of other questions for you that we have not discussed. Is your vision to have a credentialed program, or for it simply to be kind of like adult continuing ed?
You know, I'm kind of picturing it as both. I do want it to be an option for people who want to go on to become licensed architects. And if that means being accredited, then that's something I'd want to shoot for. At the same time, I also want to make it a program.
Well, that'll be necessary. That's current status quo. It will have to be accredited by the NAAB.
Right.
Yeah.
I also want it to be a school that's open for somebody who just wants to come with maybe their son and daughter and learn how to build a house as a way to bond together and learn a skill. I don't want it to be purely academic. I don't want it to be something where you have to score a minimum on your GRE in order to attend. I want it to be, if you want to learn how to build and you can be there building, then you should be able to come.
Great. Let me just say, if I want to build a house, And I know that the people in your program really know how to build a house. I'm going to use them. I'm not going to use someone. I don't care if they're registered. I am going to use the one that is going to do it. And, I mean, there was a time where Cooper Union did not have accreditation.
That's right.
And everybody hired them.
And it was a free school. And you could come and you could drop in for classes,
yes.
Or you could be in the program.
Yes.
So, I mean,
nice.
I mean, the goal would be that the Verb School somehow would be a free school.
Would be a free school that everybody says, my God, I want someone from that school to build my house.
Or to teach me how to build my own house.
Yes.
And then perhaps it could be a collaborative team of instructors and the homeowners. I mean, when you look at the reality that the cost of a Master's of Arch 1 from Harvard is equivalent to the cost of building a house almost anywhere on the planet, that is awesomely discouraging. I mean, a house or a degree, you know?
I wish I would have gone with a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, do you have anything to add?
I've just been noticing that lately there's a lot of articles on the internet about the education bubble, and there's a lot of people questioning the value of college education in the world today. The costs are just going up more than inflation for 20 years. And so I don't think this is a situation.
True, so true.
Architecture school.
True, so true.
I think these are questions that need to be answered specifically for architecture schools, and I really like what Katie's doing.
Well,
I hope she can come back and give us an update in a few months.
Oh, she will. I'm sure.
I will.
Unless overseers and what do they call that on the Harvard? The reverend and beloved overseers of the corporation come and apprehend you and pillory you in the Tercentenary yard for acts of blasphemy against.
But travel is part of your curriculum, isn't it?
I'm sorry, say again?
Traveling. You have a travel.
Yes. Oh, yes, she does.
Yes. Yeah. I actually have, right now, they're active. They're real field trips, international field trips, where you can travel with other architecture enthusiasts. And I have one to Machu Picchu, Japan, Barcelona.
Terrific.
You can go do that right now. I think travel is a huge part. I actually once
took
a summer job with a merchant marine to travel the world because that was the cheapest way I could find to go see a few countries during one summer. I mean, you have to travel. You have to get out there. I love the way Tadeo Ando got himself educated. He just traveled around and took note of what he liked and what he didn't like.
That's how all the great architects did it. You must... There's nothing like seeing it firsthand.
Absolutely. There's nothing like touching it. There's nothing like standing up next to it and see how the scales compare.
Yeah, you know what? At Cooper Union, we used to have a year where you go out into the field. Do you remember fourth year or even in thesis?
Yeah, the gap year. Some people took it, some people didn't.
Yeah, right.
I was fortunate enough to have a parent who gave me $1,100 and said, go to Europe. You know, you keep moaning that you need to see this stuff. Go to Europe. And I did. And I went to London, Paris, Venice, Rome, Florence, Genova, Marseille, Lyon. I stood next to the Salvation Army building, Corbusier Salvation Army building in Paris, and saw the just indescribably perfect color of green paint that was on this steel lattice that was like a hedge in front of that building. I mean, the French, they know how to handle the color green, which is a very difficult color. You know? No, it is.
There are pleasant surprises and there are disappointments, too.
Well, sure. Yeah. George Sawicki's inability to find a pissoir in Bilbao. You remember that? You need to keep working on the elements that will distinguish your school, the Verb School.
Would you go out and build for, say, underprivileged people or something like that? I would
love for this to also be a social cause, to build houses for people who really need houses.
There is a social contract that I believe we should fulfill. Yeah.
Yes, and, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, it sounds great, and you know I support that kind of idea.
Thank you.
But it's not all. Remember, it's not all. You have to be intellectual. This is not an anti-intellectual movement. It is you can't. It's not. You have to be refined and cultivated.
Well, yeah, and is that sociological analysis up on architectureaddiction.com?
It is not yet. I could tell you the address of that.
No. Get it up on there, because we're close to our legal limit of rant here.
Okay.
We do try to respect our time slot of 60 minutes without abusing the good graces of Heritage Radio Network or of our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, or of the time of our fabulous engineer, Nat Wiener, or our producer, tagger, Dan Bryndell. Do get that up on architectureaddiction.com so that everyone can go and look at that. Is there a way that we know of to contact the chair and the dean at Harvard Design School? Do you know what their email addresses are by any chance?
I would like
the listeners. Okay.
Yeah, I can get that for you right now.
All right. Well, hold for that. And then we'll go out. Because I think your listeners should be in contact. Because I do want a response. It is an open forum, and I think it's time that Preston Scott Cohen came down to Brooklyn. He's here frequently. He was here at the Store for Art and Architecture and wouldn't give me the time of day when I wanted to talk about these issues. It was all about, let me pat myself on the back, and I thought that was disgusting, and I will hold him accountable if he's man enough to come and talk here. You know, I am nothing personal, but I think there's intellectual dishonesty going on when the chair of an architecture department is not licensed as an architect. We have to talk about that.
Head in a professional.
Do you have that email?
I went on to my Harvard email, and I did a search for his last name. It looks like he did not send us a single email the entire year I was there.
Let us say no more. This has been Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network with Katie Purviance, Basich, Roderick L. Knox, Matt Arnold, and your host, Curtis B. Wayne, architect.
Dr. Curtis B. Wayne.
Thank you. Dr. Wayne will be back next week with Donna Sapolin, who has been the editor-in-chief of This Old House magazine, talking about how the DIY revolution has changed the balance of power between designers and the consumer of our design services. That'll be really interesting. Thank you for listening. Talk to you again soon.